Recording stopped.
Good morning, honorable members.
Recording in progress.
Morning, Chair.
Coliso, can we have the agenda flagged on the screen? Good morning, honorable members, again, and let me take this opportunity to welcome all honorable members in the meeting, our invited guests. You are highly appreciated for your availability for this meeting, particularly our planning and monitoring department and the Office of the Auditor General. I want to take this opportunity to warmly welcome you to this important meeting. This is the time of the year where we assess the performance of the department for the year. I'm going to request that we observe a moment of silence for meditation or prayer. Thank you very much. Can I get the mover for the adoption of the agenda, honorable members? Mr. Malachi, honorable Malachi.
I move, Chair, for adoption.
Thank you, Mr. Malachi. Moves. Can we get the seconder?
Second, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Heron. Agenda being adopted. Can we then note of apologies? I was told that Coliso is going to write the exam today. I'm not sure who's representing her office today.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning.
Chairperson, my name is Luazi.
Okay.
My surname is Ben. I'll be standing in for Ms. Pasia.
Okay, you're welcome, Mr. Ben.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Our apologies. It's DM Chwede, and it's Dr. Ndombi Kumalo, Honorable Sihlwayi. Those are the three apologies that we have, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ben, we'll now go into the agenda. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Office of the Auditor General to brief the Portfolio Committee on the assessment on the financial and non-financial performance of the Department of Human Settlements and its entities. AG, you're welcome and your team. Mr. Londolozi.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you so much for having us today. My name is Cornay Meiberg. I'm the Business Unit Leader responsible for the Human Settlements Portfolio. It is our privilege today to share with you the 2021-22 audit outcomes of the human settlements portfolio, as well as on the sector, some observations that we've made there. And we really hope that these insights that Londolozwa will share with you shortly will also assist the committee to enable you in your oversight role, so that at the end of the day, we can move closer to public confidence, where the citizens can also have a more positive lived experience coming from the human settlements portfolio. So we really hope that in terms of our mandate and our commitment, that we will assist you today. Thank you so much, Chair. I do see there's a hand up, so and thereafter, Chair, I'm handing back to you, and then Londolozwa can do the presentation. Thank you so much.
Mr. Malachi, is it Ligas here?
Oh, yes, Ligas here, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Mr. Londolozwa.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to yourself and good morning to the honorable members. I will share the slide from my side. Let me just get the sharing of the screen right. Chair, please confirm that you can see the presentation.
Yes, I do see it, Mr. Londolozwa.
Okay. And thank you very much for allowing me to have an opportunity again to present the audit outcomes of the human settlement portfolio, as well as the sector at large, as Corneille has mentioned. And as we have done in the past, I'll start with our reputation promise. As an organization, we are embarking on a new strategy. And one of the areas that we focus on is influencing the government and the public sector at large to have a culture shift whereby there's a change in the mindset in focusing on the lived experiences of the citizens of this country, thereby building public confidence in the public sector itself, which will ultimately result in us continuing to be a relevant Supreme Audit institution to our stakeholders such as yourselves. And one of the areas that we are doing this change in culture shift is through identifying role players within the accountability ecosystem in whatever sphere of the government that we are dealing with. And we identify the role players so that we can then engage and influence these role players in their roles and responsibilities towards this focus on lived experiences of our citizens. We will then gain insights from those engagements with those role players, and those insights will ultimately then share with yourselves as the portfolio committee, which has got oversight over all of these role players within the ecosystem, with the view that you will then hold accountable all of these role players as the portfolio committee for them to account on how they would have gone about their roles and responsibilities over the financial period before we come in as the auditors at the end of the period and the processes. And obviously in instances where our insights do not yield any improvements, we also have got this option given to us through the Public Audit Act, where we can then enforce through the material irregularity processes, enforce some of these changes going forward. If we then look at the overall audit outcomes over the MTSF period for the sector, in this case, we're looking at the portfolio. Honorable Chair and honorable members, you will see that essentially the portfolio has remained stagnant in terms of the audit outcomes over the period, wherein the majority of the entities together with the department has received the same audit outcomes over the years. The only changes maybe is an improvement in CISOs. So the entity has finally in the last financial period resolved the issues of their completeness of revenue. So that is something that needs to be commended. However, we have seen a regression from EAAB as well as the fund that is linked to the EAAB. Also with the new entity which replaces EAAB for a period of 2 months, we did see that that entity also received a qualified audit outcome for the 2 months, 3 months that we audited. So in essence, that is the overall outcomes if you look at the portfolio, which is made up of the department and its entities. If we then focus on the performance of the portfolio, which is then linked to these lived experiences that I referred to. Overall, Chairperson, we see and we note that the portfolio only achieved 51% of its targets. Now, this is based on the actual achievements that would have been reported by the department as well as its entities, and not necessarily those programs that we would have audited. So you would be aware, Honorable Chairperson, that we scope in one program in each of the audits that we perform, and the audit outcomes would then be based on that one program. However, when we then performed an analysis of the performance of the portfolio, we then would have looked at the entire achievements that would have been reported in the annual reports of the department and its entities. And that is where the 51% achievement therefore comes in. And if we then zoom as to which entities would have contributed towards the relatively low performance, we see that in essence, it's actually all of them except perhaps for NHBRC and the CISOs, and to some extent SHRA as well. So you will note, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that almost all the entities, at least majority, did report a very low achievement in their targets for the financial period that we just came out of. And then a further analysis was then done in terms of which of the indicators that are linked to the mandates of the portfolio would have not been achieved by the different entities within the portfolio. And we only focused as examples, indicators that can be linked to the MTSF targets and are directly linked to the mandate, as I mentioned. So in the department, for example, we looked at the indicator that relates to the breaking of new ground houses that needs to be delivered. We also focus on the title deeds, for as an example. At NHFC, we would have looked at the indicator that relates to the FLIS program. And you will see that for those, they were not achieved. And therefore, in terms of the lived experiences or the beneficiaries that would have been benefiting from these houses, they will continue not having access to these shelters, these low-cost houses, as well as the middle missing middle sector of society that also requires these houses that have to be delivered by the FLIS program. A similar exercise was done at HDA as well as SHRA. HDA then is responsible for housing units that have to be delivered, as well as SHRA being responsible for social houses units. And we see that over the last period, these were not achieved. Now, ultimately, this means that the portfolio will struggle to therefore meet the MTSF targets that are linked to these indicators that we would have focused on in terms of the MTSF period, because this would have also been the case, or a similar case would have been reported on in previous audit cycles. So So that is at a high level the performance of the portfolio over the period. If we also look at the financial management and the compliance, the picture is similar, Honorable Chairperson, in that there is a weak control environment around the producing of financial statements within the portfolio as a whole. The financial statements that would have been submitted to ourselves for audit all had material misstatements except for the financial statements of the department. Most of these were then resolved before we could conclude the audit, except for the HDA, the EAAB, and obviously the PPRA, because those two are interlinked. This has been what we've reported in prior years as well, Honorable Chairperson, meaning that our recommendations around, you know, the strengthening of the control environment in producing financial statements would not have necessarily been implemented. The action plans that would have been designed in order to improve the picture have not yielded the required results in ensuring that financial statements that are produced for the audit are credible and are free from material misstatements. And if this does not change, it means that the portfolio is unlikely to therefore improve in the audit outcomes going forward. However, if we then focus or look at the financial health, we don't have any concerns that we have raised for the portfolio, which is a good thing, except maybe highlight the fact that when it comes to the collection of debts, the number of days is a bit high, and we would therefore encourage that all the role players within the portfolio ensure that debts are recovered and are collected as and when they fall due, in order to avoid a situation where in the future this may lead to cash flow challenges, whereby, you know, these entities might experience a bit of issues around their cash flows due to debts that have not have been that would not have been collected. We also note that we do not have any going concern issues on any of the entities within the portfolio, which is something that can be commended. The third area in which we report on is compliance with key legislation. This has also been an issue for the portfolio in the past. We've seen a regression in the current year in that for the first time in a number of years, the department itself found itself in a position where it had to report on irregular expenditure, which is a non-compliance with the PFMA and SCM regulations. With that non-compliance, it means that all of the entities that would have reported non-compliance with key legislations will have to add the department as well in the current year, meaning overall, if we just focus on compliance with key legislation, the portfolio would have regressed as a result. If we then just zoom into what, you know, procurement findings would have identified that would then have led to non-compliance being reported on, we note, Honorable Chairperson, that the most common is around the competitive or uncompetitive nature of the procurement processes applied by the entities within the portfolio. You will note that the majority of the non-compliance on procurement findings all related to uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes. And it is on about five of the entities in which we picked up this phenomenon. However, it is good to note that, or at least would also like to highlight the fact that none of these situations or circumstances resulted in a payment of goods for services and goods that were not received, or at least we did not have any issues in terms of the quality of those goods and services that would have been received. Nonetheless, there was still non-compliance with procurement processes. Our assessment of irregular expenditure, there was a relatively big jump in the current year, or at least in 2022 compared to 2021. And it is good to note that the majority of this jump, at least a very large chunk of it, was as a result of SRA, which is an entity within the portfolio. SRA would have had an acting board for a period of about 2 years. Now, during that period, the board would have approved transactions that would have gone through procurement processes. In terms of the Social Housing Act, such instances are therefore deemed as irregular by that particular act. Hence, that 330 million irregular expenditure jump in the current year was as a result of us identifying those transactions and services, goods and services that were paid for as a result of those transactions being approved by an interim board. But the entity has since appointed a permanent board, and obviously any of the transactions that are then approved by that permanent board structure would not necessarily be deemed as irregular expenditure. The next area is on non-compliance, is around consequence management, Honorable Chairperson. There are areas where the previous irregular expenditure are not necessarily dealt with, more so at HDA, because with the HDA, we did not have any evidence that the entity itself is instituting any investigations for previously reported irregular expenditure. And others, such as the NHBRC, for example, there were attempts, or at least there are attempts to try and deal with this irregular expenditure, which has been outstanding for a number of years now. However, the entity will run into challenges such as, you know, officials cannot be identified and found because they would have left before the investigations were concluded. And some of the investigation reports were not sufficient. The entity, for example, did try to get condemnation from National Treasury, but unfortunately, National Treasury was not convinced that enough was done in order to condone that particular irregular expenditure. NHFC, at the conclusion of the audit, they were waiting for the approval from National Treasury as well as CISOs. Otherwise, SRA and to a certain level, CISOs also has dealt with some of the irregular expenditure that would have been previously reported. So that is the outcomes in terms of the portfolio, Honorable Chairperson, and again, the portfolio being the department itself and its entities. If we then move now to the sector observations, and in this instance, we'll be looking at the department and the nine provincial departments. At first, if we just look at the audit outcomes, the audit outcomes for the sector are similar to the audit outcomes of the portfolio in that we have qualified provinces and majority being unqualified with material findings, and which is similar to the previous picture I would have presented on the portfolio itself. And in the main, the unqualified with findings are similar again to the portfolio in that these are repetitive findings whereby the action plans to address the issues that would have been raised in previous years were not adequately implemented to ensure that those that are sitting under the unqualified findings improve their audit outcomes. It's similar to, again, the Northwest, Mpumalanga, GP, and Free State, where we're seeing a very slow response by management to issues that would have been raised. However, these are material enough and are so material that they were not resolved before the audits were completed. If we then focus on service delivery, again, we would then look at two indicators, Honorable Chairperson, which are again directly linked to the mandate of the sector, as well as the grant, which is then used and transferred to the provinces. So we see a picture in which 96% of the grant was spent. However, if you focus on the service size and the top structures indicators, again, two indicators that form part of the MTSF, on average, we see that for the service size, the portfolio would have achieved about 150% if you average the achievement of the nine provinces. However, when you look at the top structure, the picture, or at least the achievement, decreases by half to about 73%. When we further analyze this, Honorable Chairperson, we see that it may be that the provinces would then focus on the service sides, because that would be easy to do. So they would focus on those in order to boost the achievement that is reported. However, this then poses a challenge, because we see that you'll see later in the presentation that when it comes to then finalizing the top structures, these projects take a very long time to be completed. So it begs the question as to why on an annual basis there will be a focus on servicing sites, which ultimately take years, if at all, for those projects that are then constructed, or at least the top structures that are constructed on those service sites take years to be completed. But on an annual basis, we see that, you know, there's a stronger focus on servicing sites by the portfolio. When we then look at the similar picture, but over a three-year period, we took the five-year MTSF on three indicators. These indicators are MTSF indicators. I must just note that the title deeds one is made up of about five sub-indicators, but we've consolidated them into one indicator called the title deeds registered. We then take the 5 years and we straight line what the 5 year target should be after 3 years, which then gives us the second column there, the MTSF target over the 3 years. We compare this with what the sector would have planned as their targets over the 3 years. And we see that in all three indicators, the sector would have under targeted in terms of where they should be after 3 years. And we then lastly compare what they would have targeted versus what they would have achieved over the 3 years. And you can already see, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that it will be very difficult for the sector to meet their five-year targets as included in the MTSF. And this is because what the provinces are planning as their targets for these MTSF targets are not aligned to what the national department would have expected the targets should be. And those targets, the expectations by the department, will then be informed by the MTSF targets. At this point, Honorable Chairperson, through you, I'd like to just sensitize the members that if you look at the first indicator, which is the breaking new ground houses delivered, I held a meeting with the management of the National Department on Monday, and they brought to our attention that MTSF target has been reduced, and they received approval from National Treasury for that target to be reduced from 450 to 300,000. So our calculations based on that would then have to change based on the new approved MTSF target going forward, Honorable Chairperson. But if the portfolio committee would like an updated assessment or analysis, we can then submit it subsequent to this meeting. When we then make an investigation as to what could possibly be the cause of what we see in the previous slide, where you know, the target is not aligned with what the target should be from an MTSF point of view. We then realize, Honorable Chairperson, that it probably starts at the planning stage, where the national department contracts with the provincial department. There may not be an alignment in terms of what indicators should be in the annual performance plans of the provinces. I would have mentioned in the previous slide that the title deeds indicator is broken down into four or five different sub-indicators. Now, if we focus in this slide on the last four indicators, which are all about registration of title deeds, already you see that most provinces, in fact, if not all except for KZN, they don't include all of those indicators in their APP. What this means is that they will not report on title deeds in their annual performance reports. And if we don't report title deeds, we then see this picture emerging where about 70% after 3 years, sorry, not 70%, 7% after 3 years, 7% of the title deeds registered would have been achieved by the sector, which is 80,000 out of the 1.1 million title deeds that are to be registered over a five-year period. But after 3 years, we are sitting with only 7% in terms of where the sector is. So that is the one area where we always mention the lack of coordination between the spheres of government. This is an illustration of that very same fact, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, where the title deed is not included in the performance plans of the provinces. We then look further, or at least perform further investigations at a project level, because it is these projects that are included in these business plans, which must ultimately support what is achieved by the sector and support what should be then the MTSF targets. We already see, we've categorized the findings that we have on projects into four areas, Honorable Chairperson. And already you can see that when it comes to the timing and completion of projects, none of the provinces gets it right. So we've reported findings on all of the provinces, projects from a timing point of view. And then we do have findings on the other areas in which we categorize our findings on this project. Maybe we first started looking at from the enrollment and registration of builders of the project, which is the planning processes around this project. You know, are these projects registered with the NHBRC? And are the builders that are appointed by the provinces, you know, registered with NHBRC? What we found is that although the projects may be enrolled and the builders are registered with NHBRC, they are provided, or at least they are appointed to construct projects that in terms of their NHBRC grading, they should not be. And therefore, you find a situation where they become overwhelmed and you find that the projects are therefore not finished on time, there's poor quality of workmanship. And in some instances, they run into cash flow difficulties and therefore end up abandoning those projects. So it also starts with there in terms of the builders, are they properly qualified, to construct such big projects in terms of their grading by the NHBRC. And we've included in this slide, Honorable Chairperson, three projects, as well as the lived experience that we would have, gained sight of as we were performing work around this project. And the first one being the Mthubakazi project in Butterworth, Now, this project is also a very old project, about 10 years when it was first commissioned. And we identified there were 692 beneficiaries. We've done work to see if over the 10-year period, any of these beneficiaries at least allocated houses elsewhere. And we found that that is not the case. And we went further and said how many of them are still alive. And we've identified that about 109 of these beneficiaries have since passed away. So meaning because of the length it has taken to complete this project, they would have passed away before they would have received their houses. Another example is the Rock Park in KZN. Again, a very old project, which was planned to have been completed in 2013 already. But however, the community decided to, you know, from their frustration, they decided they will illegally occupy these incomplete units. Now that poses a danger on the lives of the people, because anything can happen if in those houses, that have not been completed. And recently we know that there's been floods in KZN, and if they then move into houses that are not occupied, I mean, sort of that are not completed, that poses danger even more on them. A third example is the project Matlosana in the Northwest, where we found that, again, it's also an old project. And one of the reasons why the project is not moving, we found that, the grant that was allocated is sometimes used for other things, such as paying off the salaries of employees of the municipality. And therefore, the sector will require another 36 million in order to ensure that the 222 houses are completed. The next few slides, Honorable Chairperson, through you. It's just findings on specific projects, or at least observations, and just specify the issues that we would have picked up. So through you, if I can just scroll through them, because the information is there and the honorable members would have at least seen the type of observations that we are seeing when we visit these projects. But ultimately, the message is that all of these projects are old projects, or at least it's been a while since they were commissioned, but they have not been completed. And all of them fit into the picture where we saw that the MTSF indicators are not being met. And ultimately, the lives of the citizens in many parts of this country have still not improved, at least from a social housing and subsidy housing point of view. It is also good to note that we do acknowledge that some of the factors that delay the completion of these houses and projects are outside the control of the sector, in that you do get civil unrest, you do get vandalism midway through the project, and those we do acknowledge that they also play a role, the sector, at least management or the role players within the sector, cannot be blamed entirely for some of these projects that would have been delayed because of these factors outside their control. We also followed up on some of the projects that would have visited and reported on in the previous year. An example being the project in Mpumalanga, Honorable Chairperson, where we raised the quality issues, we raised the lack of bulk infrastructure. We then decided to revisit the project and only found that those issues that we had raised were still not resolved by the provincial department in Mpumalanga, which is a concern, Honorable Chairperson. And this is something that we want to raise with the portfolio committee, that these projects that we would have selected, there must be a reporting from the department in terms of whether these issues are being addressed as the project, I mean, as the sector implements a new project going forward. We have included recommendations, and we have directed them directly to the DG of the National Department, as well as the accounting officers and authorities. And these recommendations are therefore meant to ensure that these issues that we've raised are addressed, and we would implore the portfolio committee to request from the departments, as they report on a quarterly basis, to indicate the level and extent to which these projects, these recommendations would have been implemented in order to address the weaknesses that we would have identified. We've also included a slide on the KZN disaster, a real-time audit that would have performed earlier this year, Honorable Chairperson. And the insights that are coming out of there are that whether it is a response or an urgent response to a disaster or the implementation of the normal projects within the normal work that is done by the sector, we find and we see similar issues coming through. You know, the delays in ensuring that the projects are completed on time. And this would have been issues that were raised again during the special report on COVID, where those projects that were needed to be constructed, or TRUs needed to be constructed in response to the COVID, we found that there was a slow response by the sector. We are seeing that again, and we reported on that in terms of the natural disaster in KZN. And some of the project poor project management issues are again coming through, so they impact on the response to disasters as well. The land issue is a problem, as well as again the communities protesting, which is obviously outside of the control of the role players within the sector. One of the areas that we therefore look into is the material irregularities within the sector, Honorable Chairperson. Let me stress that again, in the current audit cycle, or at least the one that we are reporting on, the entities that would have been scoped in include all 9 provincial departments of human settlements, the NHBRC, the NHFC, as well as the CISOS. So those are the entities that we would have scoped in terms of the implementation of material irregularities. And here in this slide is just to highlight what we as the Office of the Auditor General, the steps that we would normally take in instances where we would have raised a material irregularity, reported it to the accounting officer or accounting authority, but we are not satisfied that they are dealing with those material irregularities correctly. In this particular slide is just to illustrate the responsibilities between the accounting officer, accounting authority, which we would have notified in terms of the material irregularity that was identified, as well as our responsibility based on the response by the accounting officer, as well as the a minister, or at least executive, and the oversight responsibilities in those different types of stages of where the material irregularity is. For step 2, 3, and 4, all of those are the options that are at our disposal in instances where step 1 is not met, meaning in instances where we are not satisfied that the accounting authority is dealing with the MI appropriately, then we've got an option to refer that particular MI to a public body. It could be the SIU, it could be the Hawks, etc. Or we can include a recommendation in the audit report on what needs to happen in order to properly address that particular MI, or we can then recommend remedial actions that have to be followed by the accounting officer in addressing a particular MI. And then we've got the different responsibilities by the executive as well as the oversight under each of those options. When we then look at the human settlement sector, we do have about 16 MIs that we are tracking, and they are at different stages, as previously mentioned in the previous slide. We have notified, at least at the close of the audit process, we've got those that are sitting with the accounting officer where we have notified them. We've got those that we've received responses from the accounting officers, and we are happy that the correct steps have been taken, as well as those where we were not entirely happy with the steps taken and therefore have recommended the actions to be taken in their audit reports. And then there's few that where we just indicate those steps that were taken. If you look at number five, the actions that were taken by the accounting officers that we therefore deemed were appropriate to resolve the issues. And then at number six, then we've got an example of an MI that was resolved because of the action that was taken by the accounting officer. If we then go towards the conclusion of the report, we've got the overall root causes of what has caused these weaknesses that I would have touched on in the presentation. And in the main, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, the one that I'd like to elevate is the one around the lack of adequate coordination by the department with other government institutions, as well as the implementing agents. I would have painted a picture where we see that the national department is not entirely aligned with what the provinces are doing. And as a result, you find that the work that is done by the provinces, which then needs to feed to what the national department is reporting, is not adequate in order to address the needs as required by the MTSF targets. So the main root cause around the poor performance of the sector is that one where that coordination needs to be improved in order for the sector to improve its performance. And this is applicable in when the department is also dealing with its public entities, which also contribute towards the MTSF targets. But if they are not being achieved at the entity level, the sector will not meet those targets it has set for itself for the MTSF. We've obtained recommendations and issued recommendations in order to address these shortcomings that I would have touched on. And as part of my introduction, Honorable Chairperson, where I had mentioned that we then engage these role players within the accountability ecosystem. In our discussion, the minister, she did provide some of the commitments, which we will then track and continue to have engagements with her in order to get an assessment of how far she is in terms of implementing these commitments that she would have provided in our engagement with her. We also did go back, Honorable Chairperson, and look at the recommendations we would have given to the audit committee, the portfolio committee, and we did an assessment and reflect on the implementation of those recommendations previously in this particular slide. And we then also just give a message in terms of what needs to happen going forward in order to address some of the shortcomings, at least at the entity level within the portfolio. We do commend the CISOs, for example, that This is what happens when you see that the action plans that were recommended to management being implemented. You find a situation where there is improvement, at least in the audit outcomes, and with the improvement in the audit outcomes, would also expect to see an improvement in the performance. So with CISOs, we saw that CISOs is one of the two entities that had achieved on their performance information or targets, and also improved on their audit outcomes because of the implementation of our recommendations going forward. The last point there, maybe Honorable Chairperson, is just to also highlight that it is important that critical vacancies within the portfolio are filled. And we do note that the Minister and the National Department is working towards filling all of those vacancies in the entities that have got critical vacancies, positions available. Lastly, Honorable Chairperson, is the overall message for the audit cycle, where we say we see no sign of improvement in the audit outcomes, performance targets, achievements, consequence management, as well as the coordination. And these are areas that I would have touched on in my presentation. And linked to that is this continuing completion of projects. And obviously, these are the projects that will then lead to an improvement in achievements of performance information. And if those projects are not completed, we'll continue seeing a situation where the sector, as it were, is not achieving its targets that it set out over the 5-year MTSF period. As a result, the impact is that we continue to see a backlog of the supply of low-cost houses. We see that the missing middle remains stranded, in the sense that those that cannot afford or are too rich for low-cost houses but cannot afford loans from commercial banks, they continue being stranded in that they are hit on both sides. And also, the availability of social houses is still lagging, and therefore our communities cannot live close to the economic hubs, because that is what the FLISP, at least the social houses program, is for, is to ensure that people live closer to the economic hubs so that they can avoid to travel long distances to get to and from work. Honorable Chairperson, that is the story for the human settlements portfolio, as well as the sector for the 2021-2022 financial period. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Londolozi, and the team from Auditor General. I'm now going to invite members to ask questions for clarity, seeking questions, because people who must answer the questions for Auditor General are the department, so we can just ask clarity seeking questions, so that when you are meeting with the department, you are very clear on issues that the Auditor General has raised. I'm now going to invite members who want to speak to the input of Auditor General.
Honorable Chair, my name is Pinky Kikano.
GM, welcome. Your turn is coming later.
No, I agree, but I wanted to suggest something.
Okay, all right.
Yesterday, when the AG and us spoke on another report. It goes nicely when AG speaks and monitoring and evaluation speaks, because there are certain areas where things overlap. I mean, what AG picks up and what frontline monitoring picks up. So sometimes there's a possibility for them to overlap, and then you can see synergies even when you do. I mean, if you talk title D, it's a ticking time bomb from the side of the department. AG is picking it up, and it is remaining, it's remaining an unfinished business, just as an example. So I was saying, if it's possible and if members agree, we present and then you see the synergy among that. Unless if AG is in a rush.
Chair Powell.
Yes, Honorable Powell.
I'd like to support the recommendation of the official from the Deputy Minister's office.
No, it's the DM, not the official. Honorable DM Pinky Kekana who speaks.
Oh, my apologies. I support the recommendation of the Deputy Minister.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Powell. Honorable Malachi?
Yes, Chair. Because you have allowed Paul to speak without her hands up, I felt that I must come in also to agree with her that let's allow that process.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. And we have disadvantaged those that have raised their hands. Can we then take it as requested by the GM for planning and monitoring and evaluation? So can I request members to take down their hands, and then we allow the planning and monitoring to present, and then we'll then ask questions after the two presentations. Thank you very much. DM Kekana and your team, you're welcome. Let's give you the opportunity to present.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. And let me also recognize the AG. Chair, with me is the team from Frontline Monitoring that is responsible for human settlement or Department of Human Settlement related issues that they play frontline monitoring, and they look at, they use various methodologies and researches, including our own institutions, whether Status A and other evidence-based research. So the team is led by Chief Director Kifile Sitawane, who is going to take us through this report. And I think, Kifile, as you do that, we have already listened to what the AG was saying and the synergy. So you just show as you pass through so that it becomes easier for the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm trying to share my screen and the presentation. Let me see. Can you see the presentation?
Not yet, ma'am.
Okay, let me see. Okay, I'm just putting something out. Apology for that.
Unless if you share it with somebody, Kifilwe, who's in the portfolio committee to help you, if you have a challenge.
Okay, let me email it to Samir. Thank you, DM.
Secretariat, can you help in projecting the presentation, please?
Yes, I'm on it, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. There you are. Can you put it in the slide mode? You send us a slide presentation. Didn't you send the portfolio committee the same program? Oh. Is that the one? Okay. Kifilwe, can you proceed? There is the presentation on the screen. Kifilwe, this is not what you gave us. Is this what you are presenting? Can you please talk to us on the line? On the here in this thing. Sorry, Chair.
Good morning, members. This is what is currently being projected. Is the supporting document that was sent together with the presentation. I just request a few minutes. We are trying to load the presentation. It was sent and circulated, but this is what we see now is the supported document. Just I request a few minutes, honorable members. The presentation will be projected in the next 1 minute.
Can we then remove this one so that the real presentation can be projected?
Yes, please.
Yes, we can see. Proceed, Gneida.
Good morning, honorable members. I request that we must remove this presentation. We want to load an updated presentation, please. Honorable Chair, we request that we should be given allowance to share the presentation. Currently, it's not allowing us to share.
Mr. Ben, give them the co-host.
Honorable Chair, Ms. Kifilwe is the co-host. I made a co-host long time ago, Chair. Let me just double check, but she is currently a co-host, Chair.
Okay, Mr. Ben, it's currently now San Mary who is sharing. San Mary Bridenham.
Noted, I'll make her the co-host now.
Thank you. Apologies, honorable members, for this, but we'll try to finish our presentation within the time that has been allocated to us. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and my name is Kifiwe Sithwabane, as DM has already alluded to. The presentation in terms of the contents of the items that are captured throughout the presentation, we'll be looking at the introduction and the purpose of this presentation. We'll also cover the methodology and approach that we have used, the strategic intent, as well as the problem statement. We also looking at the DHS, the policy changes, as well as evaluations, the analysis of the department's annual report, and the MTSF 2019 to 2024 performance. We also have covered the key achievements and the persistent challenges, the binding constraints, lastly, the recommendations. In terms of the introduction, this presentation, we are presenting an assessment of the Department of Human Settlements performance against the annual targets for the year 2021 and 2022 the tabled annual report. And the purpose is to appraise the portfolio, is to appraise the department against the performance of the department, both AAPP and the MTSF, for the period ending 31st March 2022. This presentation also focuses on key achievements, persistent challenges, binding constraints recorded during the DPME monitoring processes. It provides recommendations to the portfolio committee for the department on what needs to be approved going forward. Next slide. The methodology and approach that has been used, as well as in terms of the way that at DPME we conduct our monitoring. The methodology that we are using is anchored on the results-based monitoring and evaluation, of which we rely more on evidence that will assist in terms of decision making. Then when we do or collect what called the evidence, we use a number of resource data and platforms in terms of verifying the information as to whether that particular activity or indicator is moving according to the way that is expected. We use a variety of data that includes government think tanks, universities, as well as multilateral organizations to analyze the progress, of which one of the government data sources that we use, Status A, is part of the data that we are using. Other sources of data that we use include the findings from the evaluations, the research reports, the policy briefs, as well as the case studies. We also conduct our verification through site visits, where we select a certain sites, and then we go to those sites to verify the information. I think DM has already alluded to it that we do site visits together with the frontline service delivery monitoring. In addition, DPME analyzes the administrative data and track the progress. The recommendations are made on the basis of evidence, and the remedial actions are then design, and also looking at risk analysis in terms of potential for implementability and impact. And regular engagements, we continue them with the departments and as well as the organs of state in all spheres. Next slide. The methodology that I referred to, the results based framework. We first look at the inputs, where there are financial as well as human resources. Then from the inputs we develop the activities, as well as the outputs, where we also look at the interventions. Then the outcomes, we look at the intermediate effects. Lastly, we look at the impact, of which is the goal, where we focus more on the long-term results. The results-based monitoring, it focuses on the achievement of outcomes and impacts. Traditionally, we are only tracking the input resources, strategies, activities, and outputs. Next slide. While we are doing the monitoring part as well as evaluation, we then we have developed the theory of change that we are using as a guide. I've already mentioned before under the inputs, then that is the finding, the frameworks, the institutional human segments, institutional framework that forms a part of the inputs, and then the activities. It's more on the what called the planning and also the tracking of the projects, but this is based on the housing programs and projects that are being implemented. Outputs, we are looking at the whole what called property market, but with special focus on the government subsidized what called housing. We also look for rental at social housing, in this case of which is houses to own or what called to rent. And the outcomes, we focus more on sustainable communities with improved livelihoods. We look at the integrated settlements that are functional, as well as increasing the access to shelter, while also taking into consideration on the economy at large, since housing, they form part of the economy. Then the impacts, we focusing on the changes in the ecosystem as well as the human conditions. For example, the inclusiveness, the equitable economic growth. So this is what at the end of the whole process that we want to see these changes. Next slide. The strategic intent and the problem statement. We know that from the Constitution that everyone has the right to have access to adequate housing. So for this sector, we are trying to, what called, to respond to the constitutional mandate as well as the UN United Nations Habitat Elements of adequate what called housing, tenure, access to services, affordability, as well as the access to what called location. And we as the sector expected that we need to move towards the realization of the sustainable human segments and improve living standards for households in order to address poverty and create employment. This will then improve the socioeconomic conditions and sustainable future and ensuring the integration. This is actually as stated in the what called in the NDP. The NDP it clearly expresses the need to redress and address the challenge of apartheid geography. Can you move back to the slide? Yes. The NDP 2030 it clearly expresses the need to redress and address the challenge of apartheid geography, and it also focuses to ensure the spatial integration through the accelerated provision of well-located land to poor households. Then human settlements addresses poverty alleviation whilst looking at attaining the socioeconomic conditions and the what called the bright future for all the households. And currently there's an increasing housing demand as household size is reducing, then this is coupled by the rapid urbanization, which results to proliferation of informal settlements, and now especially along the railway lines. The urbanization rate is sitting at 63% as we speak, and this is what we call expected to rise to 71% by 2030. This is actually a growing what we call a pressure, and the sector is facing this what call challenges, and we need what call to come up with working what call interventions that will support and make sure that that what call the challenges that we are facing, especially this one of urbanization, is addressed accordingly. The delivery of houses has dropped from a peak of 271 in 2007 and to 109,000 in 2019. The number of what call of the drop of the numbers, it has been caused by a number of reasons, one of which is the increasing prices on the material. There's also an escalation in terms of citizen protests over housing and increasing land, what called invasions. This is caused by the fact that the size in terms of households is reducing, where the youth, they move out from their homes. There are also effects of climate change, floods and fires results in the destruction of homes and loss of lives and displacement of people. We've just seen with the recent flood disaster from KZN. The growing inequality in rural inequalities and urban inefficiencies have grown almost by a reasonable what call a percentage. The poor living conditions across urban and rural areas, they are evident located on the periphery. As we have seen also the backyard shacks in the townships and the overcrowded family homes or dilapidated inner city buildings. Next slide. While we were doing the assessment on the annual, what call annual report, in terms of we've what call noted that the department has made some what call improvement or review in terms of the policies. As I've listed here, the rental strategy on land and human settlements, policy on human settlements, property transaction support centers, empowerment of the designated groups, as well as a policy on social facilitation. And then this what call this policy that has been what call developed and others what call reviewed, the impact there is towards provision of the adequate housing and living and what's called good living conditions. The policies that have been what called revised is the increase in terms of the subsidy quantum for all housing programs, the change in social housing income bands, the exemption of social pensions recipients from the income qualification criteria, the revised finance linked policy. And since there was a COVID, then the department had to do some revision also with regard to the rental, where they actually then the department approved the rental relief policy as well as the debt relief policy to respond to the COVID-19 challenges, since the tenants, they didn't have enough money. Some have lost jobs to pay the rent. On the evaluations, the department have completed one evaluation on the upgrading of informal settlements, and one evaluation study on rental housing tribunal, and one on the implementation of the finance linked individual subsidy. All this, the impact is toward making sure that the indicators that they need to perform on, they will be achieved, because when the policies are being revised as well as some evaluations are conducted, it enables the department to be able to perform and unblock certain programs that needs to be performed and being highlighted as being this process, it highlights all the stumbling blocks that hinders the progress in certain indicators. Next slide. The analysis of the department and annual performance as per the tabled annual report for 2021. The department is running five programs. Then in terms of the financial progress is that the department's total expenditure for the period ending March is currently sitting at 98%, but this it was for the previous financial year of 2021. Based on the current 2021-22, the department achieved the audit opinion with emphasis of the matter as raised by the AG in the audit report. Matter, the AG has already covered such issues as they've already reported. Next slide. The consolidated departmental performance with green, meaning that in terms of the performance, they're sitting at 64%, and amber is where the targets are partially achieved, and 10% not achieved or very progress that has been made. Then with the next graph is indicating now per program, that out of the blue, the approved targets, green, it shows the targets that has been achieved, and then partially, and where it is red, it shows all the targets that has not been achieved in the various programs. Next slide. The performance now per programs on the integrated human settlements planning and development in terms of they are sitting with 58% achieved, and whilst we are on this program, I know that AG has already indicated issues around planning between the national department and the provinces, as well as what called, especially the planning between national and provinces. And AG mentioned that there is a contradiction with regard to that, especially on the issues around where they picked up this, on the issues around the title deeds. Yes, we concur with the AG on that. But on that note, I would like to then advise to say this matter has been attended by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, where the department and the provinces were called to sit down and agree. And that process is called the standardization of the indicators. Now, going forward, we will see what called the alignment in terms of the indicators between the provinces and national. So going forward, that issue, it has been addressed. On the program of the informal settlements, currently what has been achieved is sitting at 63, of which there are still some number of challenges with the informal settlement upgrading plans and projects, of which the plans, they're actually moving at a very slow pace. They are lagging behind in terms of the targets that were supposed to have been achieved. Then under program four, rental and social housing, this program, it is now moving, although it was delayed, of which one of the blockages, it was the issue of the income brand that had to be increased to 22,000 in order for this program to be implemented. So we have seen now a steady growth after the policy was revised by the department. This information that I've just shared, it also applied to affordable housing as well under that program of FLISP. Next slide. The trends the trends in terms of showing that this graph is just showing the trends in terms of the progression under these programs. Next slide. On this slide, we have looked at the APP targets as well as the annual performance. One of the targets in the MTSF is it's about the priority development areas where the department, they've already declared 136, of which that was done. In terms of the APP, 30% of the segments grant for the current financial year was to be invested in the priority development areas. In terms of the performance, there's 108 grants. HSDC grant is it already invested in the 108 priority development areas, of which 42 priority development areas, they are also allocated with the informal segments upgrading partnership grant. The next is on the now implementation programs that needs to be implemented in the priority development areas. Currently, it's only seven plans that have been audited, but in terms of the plans that are ready, they are around 58, but they need to be audited in order to be included to change that color red of the plans that are ready for implementation for the priority development areas. The third indicator in terms of the rezoning, the progress here is very, very poor. Currently, there's only 2.7% that has been rezoned, of which for the current year that we are reporting, there's nothing that has been done. Next slide. In terms of the spatial transformation as outcome one, there is a lack of land for development of low-cost houses, as well as another issue is on land invasion that is becoming increasingly rampant as an alternative need. Then there are delays in transfer and rezoning of land, including government, and as a result, this denies the poor households the right to access houses and to improve their living conditions. There's also the high cost of well-located land for human settlements development. And this now, it actually contributes or leading to the urban sprawl, where developments now, they need to be taken outside, to take place outside the urban edge. As a result of slow rezoning of strategically located land, then development, they still implemented outside the urban edge. Next slide. The outcome two is the adequate housing and improved quality. We are looking at all the targets falling under this outcome. As the AG, they've already indicated the number of the targets, it was revised and approved. Now they are reporting on the target of 300,000 subsidized houses, of which the annual target was 52,000 and they've performed 36,000. Then out of the 20, the target 20,000, the target for this financial, for the financial year that we are assessing it, it was 5,762, of which they've performed 4,401. They've delivered what call the sites 31,000. Of which the target was 39,000, where they delivered 31,004. And then under the Human Settlements Development Grant, and 55,000, which is was the target of sites to be developed by USDG grant. The Urban Settlement Development Grant, it's only allocated for metros. As we all know, that a number of human settlements, they are actually at the metros. With social housing target, they've performed and delivered 2,771. The CRUs, the community residential units, they've delivered 669 for the new units, and there's nothing on the on the upgraded ones. And the target for the year was 975. On the informal settlements, in terms of the indicator, it shows that they they are expected to deliver or upgrade the human the informal settlements up to phase three. And the target for this year was 130. Next slide. There is a slow delivery of service sites, which the delays, they deny the people what call the right to live in adequate housing as well as the standard living conditions. There is also a slow pace in the delivery of social housing, of which this was caused by COVID-19, and on the residential unit, most municipalities are reluctant to build as the payment is the rental payments are not coming as they are not being paid by the tenants, and the high cost in terms of the maintenance. There is also an issue that it was actually reported by the department that there is a lack of forward planning by provinces as well as the poor contractor, and I think ATS also made emphasis on the contractor issues which affects the overall delivery of houses. Next slide. This is the title deeds, and on this indicator, the department is not performing well at all. If as is, this indicator is divided into sub indicators, where we look at the pre-1994, the post-1994, the post 2014 and the current new title deeds. The targets, as we see on the pre-1994, the progress reported on the 5,000 pre-registered target. On the annual performance is only 4,074. Then on the post 1994, the progress is 24,000, and on the post 2014, this was a period between 2014 and 2019, the outstanding title deeds, what now has been achieved is 2,455 of the 300,000 for the 5-year period. The progress for this year, it's 9,478. I think then the percentage is on the cumulative to say out of the targets of 19 to 24 to date, they've accumulated 18%, 9%, 1.1%, 4.3%. The performance on this indicator, it's very, very poor. Next slide, please. The slow delivery on title deeds is underperforming. I have already indicated in the previous slide, and it remains a concern, because even with the new title deeds, we see that this indicator is not performing. The title deed, yes, on the new projects is not matching with the annual input of new projects, adding to the existing backlog. What we have picked up is that this results on dysfunctionality of the property market. Subsidized houses have not significantly integrated into the housing market and are not providing a financial lever for the poor households to realize the market value when sold. And a number of households living in subsidized housing without a title, they are being denied a right to access the security of tenure. I think then the the graph on the right hand side, it actually indicates the terms of in terms of a number of service sites completed and the title deed. You'll see the blue, that is the number of service sites completed, but when you look at the orange color, it's running far below than the number, meaning that there is a problem on this indicator. Next slide. The major achievements based on the performance of the five programs in the APP and department has made significant strides in the following. For the financial year, the department received the clean audit, and they've managed to reduce payment of invoices after 30 days. They've developed a number of policies that seek to respond to significant interventions in terms of legal and some policy shifts. There is also it also what called performed in terms of their revitalization of the distressed mining communities program. They have assisted the provinces and municipalities to develop the cost multi-year pipeline or called reports, and implemented some 15 national priority projects in support of the first outcome. During the year, this number increased from 1,162 with 610 informal segments upgraded. And 552 they've been done by the metropolitan municipalities. The rental housing policy framework that has been developed, as well as evaluation that has been completed. Then another critical policy was the policy on the affordable housing that has been developed, which enabled what called the revision of apology for that, that led to the revision of the FLIS policy that can now accommodate a range of non and mortgage what called findings. And through the good performance on flips, a number of new homeowners, the number has increased. Next slide. The persistent challenges is on the slow progress on implementation of the programs in terms of the priority development areas. And another persistent challenge is on land rezoning that is not moving at a speed. The last one is the no progress with regard to the upgrading of informal settlements to phase three, letting the households to remain in the living conditions that are not good. Next slide. The binding constraints. I'm sorry for this. The binding constraints is the poor delivery of title deeds of both historical backlog that we have reported that is only sitting at 6.2%. And the cause of this challenge is the systemic issues in the value chain, of which the value chain we are referring to the number, we are referring to the processes that a number of departments, they are actually engaged on, where they also need to work together, starting with the Department of Human Settlements, both national and province, as well as the municipalities, and then also other key relevant department, the Department of Land or call Reform, as well as the Department of Justice in the case in cases of a historical title deeds where the owners have passed on, and the family disputes. Then the underlying issue of planning approvals is also one of the key that we have listed under the binding constraints. There's another issue on the complex of the beneficiary administration, especially with the deceased estates, as well as where the properties have been sold many times, where we also what call see a need for the deregistration processes for the cases of where there's a double registration and some clearances that they are required. So these are the points that they are actually causing more delays for the processing of the title deeds. Next slide. The recommendations, we request the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements to support the following recommendations. The Department of Human Settlements and the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, that they have to release strategically well-located land in order to in order for this sector to perform, as we have indicated that there is a lack of well-located what called land, and the department to ensure that they focus more on the rezoning and address this as an urgent priority. The department it has to unlock the implementation and upscale upgrading of informal settlements and address if there are any what's called some still outstanding policy related issues. And on this now on this point, they need to pay attention to the implementation of program management at different levels of government. The department has to establish a new set of operational and institutional arrangement with regards to funding mechanisms for human settlements programs. They also had to lead the process and urgently address the systematic issues that I've already alluded to, and consider best practice models. Lastly, the recommendation that we request the support that presidency supported by TPME to urgently coordinate intergovernmental title deed what called a summit, and the recommendations from the summit will then be placed under the interministerial committee for land. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, DME. DM, you want to close?
Comrade Chair, you, Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Now, let's allow members to engage on the report, and then we'll see what members will be guided by the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Members are welcome to interact with the report. Number one, Nolvuyo Tafeni. Number two, Honorable Mokgotho. Number three, Honorable Powell. Number four, Honorable Sehlwai. Number, those are the hands that I can recognize now. Members, can we note you so that we can see how we manage time?
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the members of the committee, and also welcome the annual report. Allocate how many minutes per person, because if that is a two report supposed to perform as members of the committee.
No, I'm saying, you're saying, Honorable Chafeni?
Yeah, Chairperson, men will start, I will start now.
Okay, I wanted to note members so that members would know how many of people want to speak, therefore the time you'll mind your presentation as you look at the number. But for now, you are four. Proceed, Honorable Member. That's why
okay,
I don't allocate time. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the AG has raised the consent vote during 2019-2020 and also 2020 to 2021 AR about internal control deficiencies in the department. While the AG found no significant deficiencies in internal control in 2021 to 2022, it was noted that the department did not have sufficient monitoring control to ensure proper implementation of the overall process of planning and reporting is improved. And also, why were the reporting underlying data used to determine the amount of the annual performance report not reviewed appropriately to ensure that the correct amount have been used in the report? Also, how is the department responding to the AG's comment around the lack of effective and appropriate? Mama?
Honorable Chafin, let me help. Department is not here now. Department will be coming after lunch. Now we're getting clarity from the Auditor General and planning and monitoring. Then when the department comes, because now they'll not be responding to your issues because they are not part of this meeting, those that are supposed to be accountable. We have invited Auditor General for in the morning and planning and monitoring to give their views on the annual report. We're giving you time to interact with Auditor General so that as you go to interact with the department later on, you'd have actually and understand the context, the issues that were raised by Auditor General and the planning and monitoring.
Okay, in the second report, an amount of 51.5 million was not transferred and set aside to fund procurement of a property in Cape Town. The transfer could not be made as the HTA failed to provide the required Section 38 PFMA certificate. In order for the department to process the transfer, what is the nature of the acquisition of the property and why did the HTA fail to provide the required certificate? And also challenges in relation to the rezoning of land within PTAs were also due to the submission of applications, with example of Mfuleni that frequently changed the layout plan and therefore the application for rezoning could not be concluded. How has the department responding to this challenge at the municipality? And also a total of 50.777 service sites were not completed USDG out of an amount target, annual target of 55,000, meaning that only 7.78% of the target was met. Some metros did not provide performance information. What are the reasons for the failure to provide performance information by metros? I don't know, because I'm in the meeting later. So I also write my questions before these departments are coming. And also I'm get in the meeting by 10 o'clock. So I submit those questions, Chair. I'm listening now for the progress.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Mokoto.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I heard you correctly, do you mean that we are not supposed to ask the department questions now? We must only refer our questions to the AG and the monitoring and evaluation department?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I am going to direct my question to the AG, or my questions to the AG. The AG has mentioned that the HDA has not instituted any investigations to ascertain and assess irregular expenditure during the past years, and no action has been taken on the reported irregular expenditure. And then the AG again has stated that the NHBRC officials who made and or permitted irregular expenditure left the entity before investigations were concluded. So my question to the AG is that, has the AGA made any recommendations to the Minister of Human Settlement to enforce that audit recommendation are implemented without fail? And then again, can the AGA make a recommendation of what should happen to the DG and the department's accounting officials for not implementing the recommendations made by the Auditor General? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm glad we've got time because I've got quite a lengthy submission to make. I think that our committee, well, let me first start by welcoming the presentations and thank you to the officials that presented. Chair, I think that our committee should be deeply, deeply concerned with the information that we've received today. We'll obviously deal with the specifics at a departmental level this afternoon, but noting that overall only 51.4% of targets were achieved for the whole portfolio, 71% of targets were not achieved at the HDA, 63% not achieved at the NHFC, 85% not achieved at the PPRA, 67% not achieved at the EAAB. Then on the failure to deliver houses, we noted that some provinces didn't provide basic performance information. As with reports that we've now received for the past 3 years, the financial management control deficiencies are stark. We've seen, again, non-compliance of procurement and contract management, quality of financial statements, and most importantly, the prevention of irregular, unauthorized, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure recorded at various entities. Then non-compliance on the prevention of irregular, unauthorized, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure has been recorded at 6 of our 9 entities. It's also noted that the portfolio has not adequately implemented action plans developed to respond to non-compliance raised in prior years, and that entities continue to transgress laws and regulations governing financial matters, as has previously been reported. We note that 943 million rands worth of irregular expenditure, 83%, is still not dealt with. So again, at the HDA, as has been raised by my colleague, fruitless and irregular expenditure continues unabated. The HDA has not instituted any investigations to ascertain or assess irregular expenditure during the past years, and no action has been taken on the reported irregular expenditure identified during the audit, which resulted in a qualified opinion on the irregular expenditure disclosure. No processes for consequence management have been instituted by the entity due to a lack of adequate oversight responsibility being exercised by the accounting authority, aka the board, and a lack of accountability by management. Again this year, uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes amounted to 189 million rand. And there's no evidence that the HTA is instituting any remedial, criminal, or disciplinary action for previously reported irregularities. It feels like Groundhog Day. We've literally seen this report coming to this committee 3 years in a row. Now, my understanding is that what this means is that corrupt officials are being protected, and that this finding is a repeat on previous years, and despite guarantees given before Parliament, no action has been taken. Now, this is also despite the accounting authority providing this committee with guarantees that punitive action would be taken and consequence management would be guaranteed for previous transgressions. Then, in terms of the Estate Agency Affairs Board and the Estate Agency Affairs Fund, we see qualified findings on compliance as a result of misstatements in the annual financial statements and non-compliance with supply chain management processes. And I've raised this repeatedly in committee when we've had the entity before us, and they've had all sorts of excuses about why these allegations are not material, but we now see a finding by the AG on this matter. And one root cause that the AG notes, again, something that I have been raising in this committee for over 3 years now, is that the root cause of some of the regressions at the EAAB is because of inadequate IT system design, and the IT system that they've been telling us that they're going to rejig for years still not being customized to meet with the specific requirements of classified transactions. Now, Chairperson, I'd like to address the committee and not the AG at this point.
Honorable Powers, if you want the meeting to address the committee, the question you address to the AG and the GM and,
cool.
and the
okay.
plenary, and then
okay.
you come back to the committee.
Okay, all right. So in terms of the BRRR report from last year, in terms of last year's AG report and the DHS's annual report, our committee in Parliament, in the National Assembly at the end of last year, we adopted an official report that contained recommendations for remedial action. Now, I'm just going to run through three of the recommendations this committee agreed to before Parliament last year in terms of preventing the recurrence of what we see here today. The first, adopted by this committee and adopted by Parliament, was that management across entities should exercise oversight responsibility in terms of internal controls, and that they should take effective and appropriate steps to prevent irregular and wasteful expenditure. Investigations should be conducted and consequence management should be instituted on affected officials. The development of audit action plans to address root causes of irregular, fruitful, and wasteful expenditure must be developed. And then importantly, progress on these audit action plans, investigations, and consequence management should be provided to this portfolio committee quarterly. Secondly, that the department must provide progress reports to the committee on the results of all investigations into allegations of fraud and corruption, and ensure that consequence management against corrupt officials is taken, and to furnish this committee again with progress reports by the second quarter of this financial year, which is now the previous financial year. And then to take disciplinary actions against staff who caused this expenditure, and that the committee, our committee in Parliament, must be informed of all actions taken again by the first quarter of this financial year, which is already gone. Then to monitor and regularly follow up, this committee must monitor and regularly follow up with both the executive authority, aka the minister, and the accounting officer and authority, so the DG and the boards, on progress on all audit action plans put in place by the departments and entities to ensure improvement in audit outcomes. We are required as a committee to monitor vacancies to ensure the stability of leadership, to follow up with entities that incurred irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, and to ensure that accounts a culture of consequence management must be enforced. Now, I just want to take you back to the recommendation that said progress on all audit action plans, investigations, and consequence management should be provided for to this committee on a quarterly basis. Now, despite these recommendations, the AG notes that the HDA audit outcome has remained stagnant from the previous financial year as a result of material misstatements and an even weakened control environment, which has seen an increased number of control efficiencies deficiencies during the year. The AG has also noted management's slow response in addressing and improving key risk areas through the audit action plan, which remains a key cause of adverse findings. Chair, it is clear from these findings that in part, this has been allowed to happen because our committee is derelict in fulfilling its own recommendations made before Parliament in summoning and requesting that the executive authority, the accounting authority, and the accounting officer present their quarterly plans on turnaround to this committee. Almost a full year has passed, and we have yet to receive a single quarterly progress report on turnaround plans from an entity. Letters requesting a parliamentary inquiry from myself to your office into the affairs of the HDA have been ignored, and this committee has instead accepted time and again the fruitless and unfulfilled guarantees of entities when they come before this committee once a year. Now, here, I'll get to my questions. In terms of the PSMA, Section 81.1, an accounting officer for a department or a constitutional institution commits an act of financial misconduct if that accounting officer willfully or negligently A, fails to comply with certain requirements of the PSMA, and B, makes or permits unauthorized expenditure. In terms of 83.2, if the accounting authority is a board or a body consisting of members, every
can I raise an order, Chair?
And severally liable. Okay.
Order. Chairperson. Yes, Honorable Sikhai, my apology for this, Chair. I don't usually do it. But I'm listening to your direction that you are giving to us to say if you want to address the department on the basis of the two presentations that have been made, that time is in the afternoon. I listened to a lot of very valuable questions from Honorable Powell that she needs to address the department clearly in our presence. They are very valuable. But my problem is now she's addressing a wrong platform.
Chairperson, I'm addressing the AG. I've got material questions on legislation.
No. But Honorable Powell, you already spend a lot of time finalize your questions so that we give others.
I won't be censored. I've got questions for the AG. I'll go through them one by one. In terms of Section 83.2, every member of a board is individually and severally liable for financial misconduct. This is in terms of the PSMA. And then in terms of Section 84, a charge of financial misconduct against an accounting officer or an official referred to in the legislation must be investigated, heard, and disposed of in terms of the statutory conditions of the appointment. Then in terms of Section 65, B of the PSMA, the executive authority, so the minister responsible for a department or a public entity, must table in the National Assembly the findings of a disciplinary board and any sanctions imposed by a board which heard such a case of financial misconduct. Now, I've written a number of letters to the entities requesting these Section 65.B letters. We've been told that certainly from the HDA's perspective, there are no Section 65B findings, which means that no disciplinary action has been taken in terms of financial misconduct despite this mounting irregular expenditure. So, Auditor General, my question to you, please can you guide myself and this committee? In terms of the Public Audit Act and the PSMA, given the lack of punitive action now demonstrated for a third year in a row by the entity itself, what remedies are available to individual members of this committee to hold individual officials members of the accounting authority and the boards liable for these adverse findings? And then Auditor General, if you could also potentially give this committee some guidance on the specific recommendations that this committee should be making to the minister and the new or the acting director general to take in terms of consequence management, punitive action, disciplinary measures. And then most importantly, I think that all of us are tired of seeing these same findings presented to us year in and year out. This committee needs to do some internal introspection and reckoning as to why we have not fulfilled our own BRRR recommendations tabled in Parliament in terms of quarterly hearings with these entities. But herein lies the rub. Is it permissible at this stage for any of us to actually go and lay criminal charges against the accounting authorities of these boards for the massive financial transgressions? I mean, the 189 million rand of the HDA alone, in terms of the provisions of the PFMA and the Public Audit Act. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Powell, Honorable Shushai, your hand has disappeared. Honorable Butaseki.
I'm here, Chair.
Okay, proceed.
Okay, thank you. I am in a very awkward place at the airport. Bear with me. I missed the first presentation, Chair, I must declare, but I will speak on the second presentation that I managed to listen to. Just three questions. Good morning, DM Gegana. The presenter speaks about a process which helps them to turn around the situation, which is the result-based management, where they have to see that the targets are not near for achievement. A strategy needs to be established. I imagine that monitoring GPME will not be able to do that outside an internal monitoring structure of the department. I want to check from GPME. Is it not helpful that departments should have internal audit and internal monitoring structures of which you meet before this medium term assessment, where you get to know how is the performance of the department program per program? Because that needs to be done, because once you come at the last moment, damage has happened. I want to check if that is not possible, that department should have internal audit and monitoring structures themselves outside the program. The second one, Chair, which is the last, you raised an issue of the slow progress on the Type D. Is DPME aware that municipalities should have a land planning, a technical department or unit, which should be the one that is addressing the issues of zoning schemes and land schemes, and be able to have an earth verification before a house is built? Because the issue of tidy deeds, slow motion, slow progress, is because those technical processes have not happened, and the house is just built in an area which is not well prepared for the property owner. Can the Department of Monitoring go down and understand why 30Ds are not progressing? Because the problem is there. You send a 30D application to the land department when all those have happened, when all those that have happened, and that's a municipality role responsibility. Can the monitoring go down and understand the details of the process plan of the slow progress on targeted? The last one is that in your recommendations, which I like the last one, it says you will have a summit of all responsible departments so that you avoid the issue of the silo mentality. You did not mention SALGA, COCA, a more specific technical department to address some of the issues. If you can include that, I will appreciate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Sikhwayo. Honorable Butas, thank you.
The time will go for our part. No other man. Go.
Thank you very much, sir. These two institutions, AG and monetary, they give me, or they give us, or myself, some sort of comfort to say there's something that we are doing to make sure that we deliver to what we have promised. But they equally raise issues that says, for you to achieve a unqualified audit or clean audit does not automatically reflect service delivery. You can spend your money at 100%, 98% as the department did, with all those good financial reports, but in relation to achieving targets, it is a challenge. And I think we should note that. But now what the DME probably have run short of telling us, in particular on the item where they are saying is persistent challenges. If we have got persistent challenges, both AG and the DME, can you give us solutions? Because in the last 3 years, we have been asking a question of consequence management, and we don't see it coming. We don't want to face the Minister Kubai, but even before Minister Kubai comes in, we have not seen that. Now, these are done by warm bodies, comrades. And then if we are not talking to the people that are not doing justice to the plans, what more must we say? Can AG and the DME comment? Because to be honest, from where I'm standing, now I've lost questions. Because these questions we ask them every quarter, but we are not really meeting what the target talks. The issue that you are raising, DME, of human settlement, theory of change, it's a very good thing. I think we are going to, this weekend, we are going to a conference or a workshop, international conference with CSRI. Among the items there, it's about dealing with informal settlements and slums. Now, that human settlement theory of change, it fits in very well in my view in that agenda. And it follows by the constitutional requirements where it says everyone has the right of access to housing. But now, in the absence of having that access, what is next? You know, sometimes I always ask myself, if a lawyer or a human rights lawyer can present a very objective or qualitative case against the department using this clause, I know there is somewhere where it says, depending on financial and all those things in terms of policy. But I believe that we can lose that case, in particular when we look at things like these ones, where we have used money, but we have not achieved what the plan was. So those are contradictions in my view. The NDP talks the same as you presented. South Africa is the most unequal society, I think, as you. All those things reflect that we are not moving towards the directions where we need to. Let's look at the performance generally. I think you have presented there before the slide that says persistent challenges. You have presented an overall of service delivery in terms of units, in terms of land, in terms of a title deed. All of them are red. The title deed is worse. Then, what must we say to the department that we have not said before? You as AG and the DME, now I would request you to assist us. I can't even ask a specific question, because in terms of what DME you are presenting principles, which all of us, we have agreed in this principle when we joined the parliament in 2019, that is, this is what we are going to do. Look at the agenda or the target of 300,000 houses that we said we are going to deliver in the 5 years. We are only at half of that. We are left with 18 months. How do we deal with such challenges? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Becky. I don't see any other hands. Let me ask AG on the, and welcome the presentation. It's empowering. One has this question on the the achievement. You see, the department has performed 51% in terms of your audit, but the budget, yes, they've used 98%. In your own view, what the correlation of the two doesn't sit well with me? What might be the problem in terms of the issues? The second issue is on the, when you said that you have engaged the department and the minister on the findings and the recurring findings, just to check on the, as you interacted with them, have you understand their governance structure in terms of the internal audit and audit committees, whether are they doing what they are supposed to do? If they do what they are supposed to do, do they give management their opinion, and management, are they implementing those opinions from the audit committees? I like the slide that you show when you start on the structures that's supposed to be
working together to make sure that there is a the outcome is more of the beneficial to our community, our society, where you show the audit committee and the internal audit committee. And is it just to check on you whether these governance structures that we have in the system, are they not fragmented such that they don't talk to one another? I'm asking this because if you look at the audit committee of the department, which I missed to understand whether they just do the audit on the department function only without looking at the entities, if they do that as the department interact with entities, are they following up on these issues, and what are they saying around those issues, the governance structure? I know that with EAAB, last time when we interacted with them, when we called the HDA and them to come, and they came to assist to present on their stabilization of the institution. We had that meeting with them, and I have raised the issue of now you don't have internal audit in the EAAB. The CEO now has been suspended. It's towards the writing of the report of the annual report. Is not these issues going to affect the outcome of the annual report itself, because people who are supposed to take decisions who are critical, they don't have a CFO, they don't have internal audit. The CEO was suspended, and the chair in that meeting promised that they are going to do their best. Now the entity has regressed from the unqualified to qualified now, and even the Fidelity Funds, which has never been qualified before, now it's being qualified. So the issue is whether the structures, the governance structures that's supposed to assist in oversighting in the department and the entities, are they, as you interacted with them, are they effective? And the audit committees, are they manned by people who have those capable capacities? The other issues on the HDA, which we have met with HDA on the 25th of May this year. The chair indicated, as we're asking the same questions, that after we've received the presentation from the SIU, we asked the chair on the while the SIU is busy with these investigations, and why are you not actually doing your part as the entity to deal with the structures, and they've actually presented this committee on the 25th of May, if one should remind members, that they are investigating, they've even submitted a condonation report to this committee that members have asked the AGA to submit. And now your finding is that they've not done anything. Is it because they ask, they deal with irrelevant things, or they are not dealing with the root cause as usually we ask them? That the action plan should actually deal with the root cause. And then on the DME, I want to welcome the issues that the DME is raising. But one of the things that I wanted to check, I hear, but the DME confirmed that, but I was worried when the Auditor General raised the issue that on the MTFS, the department has reviewed the target and it was actually approved by Treasury when the MTFS is supposed to be approved by Cabinet. I just wanted to, but I've heard the planning and monitoring confirm it, just clarity. That because the threat plan and the APP were presented to this parliament, if there is any amendment, were they not supposed to be presented to the committee so that the committee can know that there is that amendment of the target the target of the MTFS. And one note again, the summit that has been proposed, which we are welcoming. Actually, we were intended to have a workshop and with the department and on the title deed and we want to welcome the suggestion as proposed by the DME, DM, that as a portfolio committee would want to participate. The last thing is on the reporting mechanism. The DME, is it not the time that we should then actually assist the department in terms of reporting mechanism as they report, particularly to Parliament, and and to yourself, that the report that are given to yourself and National Treasury, they should be the ones that be presented to Parliament as quarterly, because in those reports, their pertinent issues are being dealt with. But when it comes to Parliament, you just see that the format itself has got loopholes that you might actually miss some other issues. Thank you very much. Those are my submissions. Let's start with the Auditor General.
Chair?
Honorable
Chair, because I know I'm going to go into another meeting, just one comment before the AG comes. I know the department will be able to deal with all these things. I think we know what the chair is raising about the sequencing of reports between ourselves, the portfolio committee, and parliament. But just one thing that you raised,
Let me just give an example of the amendment of the target, or even if a department want to amend the APP. That process cannot arrive in Parliament without you having gone through it and okaying it for it to become amended through Parliament. That's one of the things we, so it means we should ask difficult questions even when the amendments are done to say why. Did you just thumbsack when you did this APP and the targets, and why are you coming in the middle of the year to do those amendments? So certain things, in a way, for lack of a better word, becomes malicious compliance. You know, people just tick in the box, but under normal circumstances, they realize that there may be certain things or targets that cannot be achieved. That's why I like the approach that we had yesterday with our departments, where the AG was presenting before, and even what this portfolio committee is doing, to say, let's hear what the AG is saying, let's hear what DPME is saying, and then go to the department. The reality is that all departments have monitoring and evaluation units. So they must have to. Even ourselves, I can tell you, Chair, where we are. Even if we are able to give departments reports to say, here, this is where you are lacking, because there's no act that empowers us to feed them accordingly. They just take all those reports and not comply on certain things. So that's why we are now reviewing some of these things and the status of DPME, so that whatever we say goes. But the DG, our Minister Gungubele, and the DG have created a forum of all DGs where we're taking them through this thing, including cabinet. And ministers become very angry when Minister Gungubele reports on their underperformance. So it empowers the portfolio committee to also be on, to put the department on their toes, especially because we have reports that are authentic, that we have done monitoring on it. We have gone to on site and look at some of these things and say, here you are underperforming. So it helps us to reach out to some of those things. And unfortunately, I have to lock our chair. We're meeting the embassy now. So thank you very much.
Thank you, DM, for your availability in this meeting. We appreciate a lot. I think we'll meet at the summit. We must be part of that, so that the issue of the title deed get resolved as soon as possible. Auditor General, Mr. Londolozi, the chief, the executive, who's starting?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I can start if Corneille will allow me. I tried to group the questions as much as they would have come from the different honorable members, and those that are similar, I try and respond to them with response, Honorable Chairperson. And the first one is around HDA. I know that Honorable Mukhotu, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, as well as Honorable Powell, as well as yourself, Honorable Chairperson, all asked about HDA and what happens in terms of the investigations around the irregular expenditure that we keep reporting on. I think it's important to also highlight the fact that the board, or at least the board committees at the portfolio, most of them were appointed around November 2021. And this would have been a commitment that the minister would have made when she took over the portfolio, and we had our first interaction with her. And in that particular engagement, she did say that she's working on ensuring that all of the entities at least have a permanent board appointed. And I think it must be commended that in most cases that did happen. Most board, or at least the board of directors, were appointed around November. Now, this means at HDA, for example, the board would have had 3 or 4 months in order to understand the issues that would have been raised previously. So when we report that there was no investigations on previous reported irregular expenditure, we would have referred to the fact that the board, or at least the interim board that was there before November, did not investigate previous irregular expenditure. And the new board would not have had enough time by the end of 31st of March to then do anything about those issues that we would have raised. And I was going to raise, the Honorable Chairperson, the fact that perhaps when we then start the new audit cycle, that should be one of our first focus areas as we plan for the 2023 audit cycle. Maybe we start by engaging those entities that have got irregular expenditure, engage those new boards, just to get a sense of what has been done by the new boards in terms of ensuring that these consequence management / the investigations on these irregular expenditures are being investigated, so that when we then have another session with yourselves, like the one we did have earlier in the year, where we discuss the status on recommendations and implementation of those recommendations, we can at least then indicate to yourselves that the new boards that are in place are indeed doing something about this irregular expenditure, or they are also not doing anything about it. But you did mention, Honorable Chairperson, that in May, which would have been beyond or post the audit cycle, there was an indication from the HDA board that something is being done with the irregular expenditure, which should be welcome then. But I would then recommend, Honorable Chairperson, that when we then meet the committee early in the next year, we also just maybe focus on what these new boards are doing about the irregular expenditure. Also, Honorable Powell then asked if there are any recommendations that can be made around financial misconduct and the lack of remedies. I think my approach on this one would be in instances where financial misconduct has been reported, something has been done, at least by the department. An example is the investigation that is currently underway against the CEO at EAAB. So in instances where there has been financial misconduct reported, an investigation is being carried out, and this is a requirement by the Treasury Regulation 4.1.3. So the concern by the Honorable Member, Honorable Powell, that at HDA this does not seem to be happening. With the new board and them indicating that already they are investigating irregular expenditure, I would also recommend that the portfolio committee maybe ask whether indeed there haven't been any of these financial misconduct that have been reported that previously were not maybe reported to the members. But I think with the new board having already demonstrated the appetite to perform investigations, I think further engagements around any specific reporting on financial misconduct, I think it should be easy for the members to then get that information, if at all there has been any financial misconduct committed. Maybe once the investigations have been performed and completed, perhaps it will be clearer for the HDA board to then come back to Parliament and indicate that the investigations have identified instances of financial misconduct or not. I think for now, my recommendation, Honourable Member, would be, you know, you allow the board to perform those investigations as they would have indicated that they are doing something about irregular expenditure, unlike in previous instances, as you would have mentioned. And I think Honourable Sishwai, that the comments were addressed, the comments and questions were addressed to DPME, as well as Honourable Teki, unless I misunderstood. And if I come to your other comments, Honourable Chairperson, the engagements with the minister, the minister did acknowledge, you know, these the issues that we've raised in the presentation. She is familiar with them, and she did make commitments, as I would have included in the presentation itself. You know, she's made commitments to try and address these issues, you know, commitments around the MTSF processes, the issues around amending the transfer of grants to provinces. So those are the commitments that she would have made in order to try and improve on some of these concerns and observations that we would have raised. And in terms of the governance structures, what we've done per the audit, or at least per the entity, what we find is that those governance structures, Honourable Chairperson, do perform work, do make recommendations. But you might find that perhaps then, as I would have mentioned, that there is a slow response from management to implement those recommendations again, which is something similar at, you know, when you bring in the external auditors, where we make recommendations and we find that, you know, the management is not necessarily responding with the agency in order to address those issues. And this then links to the role of the national department, where we then find that the national department itself, in performing their monitoring of these entities, there are issues that are raised. There are recommendations that are also made. But what we could not find evidence of is whether then the national department goes back to those recommendations that they would have made, you know, in addressing findings they would have reported to the entity. And that is the discussion that we are currently having with the national department. So it's not enough to just raise findings on your monitoring processes and not go back and see if you know, those issues that you would have identified have been improved upon by you know, the relevant entities. You are correct on the on vacancies in senior executives having an impact on the control deficiencies, Honourable Chairperson. And we are seeing it, for example, at EAAB, as you have mentioned. So over the years, because we would look at a portfolio, you might find that entities that have those executives in place, you know, their outcomes are not as bad as those that would not have executives, you know, appointed. But once those executives are appointed in those entities that had vacancies, you find that those that had permanent executives in place, they also then have vacancies, which then will regress their control environments. And now what you see is that overall, when you look at the portfolio, one entity might improve because they would have made the necessary appointment. However, because now, you know, there are resignations and dismissals in others, when you look at the portfolio overall, you see that there is no improvement in terms of the control environment overall. So that is something that, you know, the National Department needs to get right to ensure that there is no vacancies in senior executives across all entities at all material times where possible. And I think those are the questions. I noted the comments as well, Honourable Chairperson, and those are the insights that I spoke of earlier. that as we engage with all these role players within the accountability ecosystem, we do get such insights and we lock them in and we then track them as we go forward. But in terms of the questions, those are the questions that I noted as directed at ourselves, Honorable Chairperson. Perhaps Gourney can also just add if there's one or two that I would have missed, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, if I may.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think Londoloza covered me in the main. There was more than one request to say, what can we recommend to the Portfolio Committee in holding entities accountable and improve performance? And I think Londoloza spoke to that. I was just, as I was sitting here thinking, currently Parliament is embarking on the budgeting review and recommendations process, which we usually refer to as the BRRR process. And in my understanding, it is where the annual report is being reviewed, the financial statements is being analyzed, and there's a general assessment of the auditee's performance against their available resources. And then it's my understanding that based on that assessment, the committee can then also include recommendations on the future use of resources, also linking to the budget. So I think that is just something that I wanted to add to say, while the committee is busy with this process, is also to remember that recommendations can be included in the report that could potentially assist in future performance and holding entities accountable. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DME.
Good morning. Is that good morning? Good morning, Honorable Chair. My name is Mafumo Chetsinde. Let me also greet the honorable members. I was not introduced in the morning. I'm the DDG responsible for sector monitoring for the area which was presenting today. We work together with Frontline, as the deputy minister has indicated. Since the deputy minister has left, I thought I would take that opportunity to wrap up. So let me ask Kifiwe to respond, then I will wrap up with the other questions, which most probably, you know, she may not be able to deal with from the perspective of management. Thank you, Chair. Kifiwe.
Thank you very much, DDG, honorable members, honorable chair. Thank you very much for the comments as well as the questions as raised. I'm going to start with the comment and the question from honorable Sifuai. I will cover the area, then the DDG will then add. The question, it was on saying, is it possible for DPME to work outside the current structure, like internal monitoring structures, and how is the process of Department of Human Settlements in terms of doing the monitoring per program. In terms of the current structure that we are using as DPME, is the we are monitoring using the structure within DPME that we work with the department, as the department also has their monitoring a unit within the department. And as the PME, we don't get up to the level of working with their audit unit within the department. We only work with the monitoring unit. Then on the issue of the slow progress on title deeds, I want to agree with Honourable Member Sishwai that in terms of the planning processes at the municipal level, that's where most things they are not happening. We all know that plans are being submitted, and then layout plans needs to be approved, and the whole process of township establishment. Yes, technical problems, they affect the processing of the title deeds, the ones with historical blockages, like the ones of 1994 as well as after 1994. And the with the current title deeds from 2014 to 2019 up to the MTSF ending 2024, we should not be experiencing such technical problems, because the projects are approved prior the project commence before the contractor goes on site. But what we have actually observed, of which this will be proven during the summit, because there are a number of reports also that have been produced with regard to the title deeds. The report that I'm referring to, it's a report where it was tackling the approval of the title deed restoration grant that was set aside by National Treasury to address this problem. But what we have observed is that there is a working relationship that is not being taken serious both by a municipality and a province. And you'll find that some of the the provinces, they don't even put aside the this budget of processing of the title deeds. So yes, the technicality with the previous historic, yes, it is possible, but with the current one, it's not supposed to be like that. Then the question by Honorable Zeki, where talks around the government can spend money, but the targets not achieved. In terms of the expenditure, when they implement the projects. Yes, you are correct, Honorable, find that the budget has been spent, but when you try to align the budget with the targets achieved, they are not aligned. That issue, it has been raised under the concept to say what the money has bought when we are trying now to match the budget and the targets. With regard to the persistent challenges, we welcome the request of saying let the PME give solutions on that. The solutions that we have proposed, they are captured in our recommendations, where we ask the department to focus on the following recommendations. The one of the solution is to say they need what called to focus on this issue of rezoning of the acquired what called land. Then on that recommendation in terms of the solution, it means they also need to work with all the relevant what called departments that deals with what called rezoning. And also when they do their planning, they need to consider the time what called frames that are required for rezoning. But what is actually critical is to prioritize, because if they don't put this in their plan, the rezoning will just what called not proceed accordingly. Then another what called solution that we what call we proposed is on the upgrading of human settlements. On this one, we have actually picked up the IGR what call issues that they need to tackle, as well as whilst they're doing that, they also need to focus more on the capacity, especially at municipal what call a level with regard to planning. This is really a weak, so the department has to put a focus and ensure that the capacity at a municipal level in terms of planning for informal settlements upgrading happening, while also what call addressing the issues around the institutional arrangements to inform the what call the whole value chain in terms of housing what call development. And then yes, the title deed it's the worst performing what call indicator. That is why in the recommendation we proposed or requesting that presidency and DPME coordinate the summit that will bring all the relevant parties. By a coordination, it means that we will what call working with all relevant, including SALGA, including DCOG, all the relevant parties. We will what call work with to make sure that this summit really it brings everybody under one roof in order to intervene in this indicator. And what is also bad on the issue of the title deed is that people, they are sitting in or they are living in their houses without a title, and they can't what call move in terms of also economic growth if the one wants to sell. That is why there are a number of informal sales. Then on Honorable Chair, the balance between a budget and performance percentage, I think I've already indicated to say, really it is correct that when you look at the money spent and the percentage of what has been achieved, they don't correlate. Then in terms of the MTSF revision, in terms of the numbers, it is correct to say the MTSF targets were revised, and not only for human settlements, for all the priorities. They were revised, and DPME tabled the revision of the MTSF targets to the cabinet, and it was approved. That is why those we see the results being reduced. And one of the reasons why the targets were reduced is because the budget was cut while during COVID there was a budget reprioritization as a requirement that budgets were cut to reprioritize in order to respond to the challenge of COVID. Then the reporting mechanism, as the chair has raised about the time, in terms of what called reporting, yes, as the PME under the MTSF, we report biannually, of which we reported June, and there will be another what called reporting very soon. This will also include the midterm review report. In terms of what called also looking at the Department of Human Settlements and working with national what called treasury in terms of the expenses in order to close the gaps as alluded to. Going forward, this will be incorporated in our report. I am going to hand over to DDG Mahomu to wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kifuwe. Let me greet again, Honorable Chair and Honorable Committee members. As I'm wrapping up, I think Kifuwe tried to cover everything. I'll just emphasize here and here from the management perspective on very few things. The issues, one thing which I'm very happy about is you know that our reports are now welcomed and are also being used. And the one thing I don't want to miss the opportunity of saying we've got quite extensive information. I had also asked that supporting documents be submitted. I think I saw our consolidated MTSF report, and there should be one for priority five where this department fits in terms of the seven priorities of government, and also the report which is specific to human settlement. So I requested that there's a lot of this in all these priorities are interlinked and they work together. So the whole issue of silos we are trying to break as government. So it is very essential to actually if there is time to look at the whole pack. Each one of those do have in our in our website, as well as we can offer if the need comes anytime. We will do that. So that is the opportunity I really want to offer, that this information is available very extensive and intensive analysis which we've done. So I want to raise the issue of consequence management. We have got a challenge in there with regard to us from the monitoring perspective. I mean, sector monitoring is the one which is responsible for MTSF. I'll link it up to the question of regular reporting. I think Gifuwe tried to touch on it. I want to come up with the decisions, the recommendations which we made in our reports, and most of those recommendations which you see today, they were also provided and made to the cabinet. So we raised this issue that we don't have a lever of making certain that departments are really responding on our recommendation. DM attached on the legislative side of it, which we are dealing with as well, by the planning unit, a bill for our department to have peace. And then what happened in the last cycle of reporting, the POA week to the cabinet for a report, the president took it to himself, that he will take over this part. And then all our recommendations as approved by cabinet are now cabinet decisions. And then we were instructed to actually write letters with those cabinet decisions, particularly to individual ministers. So it's, the letters we wrote are ministers to ministers, co-chairs of clusters, DG to DGs, and we are going to be tracking performance. So the first reports which we are going to get, you know, at that level, which is the level at which the cabinet now takes responsibility of this, because we failed from our side. You know, they tell you your recommendation is just a recommendation. I'll take it or not take it. But a decision of cabinet is something else. So, you know, they are reporting now, the departments. The 14th is our deadline for the MTSF reporting after they've reported on the APP. I'm going to link that to the request about the regular reporting and the alignment in terms of the, you know, the reporting template. The first time I arrived, I think it was 2020, when the first time I was there, you know, I came with the team which was presenting on this, and the committee was not happy at all with our report, saying that we cut and paste and so on the departmental information, and it went. And then I promised that, you know, we've changed. You know, since I have come in, we have changed the way we report, and we'll be going into detail and so on and so on. So I can't remember who was, but a member here who, you know, they were there. In fact, we were almost chased out. And then they said I was giving them a pacifier, a dummy. So now when I see our reports being accepted, I'm very happy. But I want to make you know, again, that we need that alignment, because in DPME, it's not only our area that is reporting. So previously, I believe for the APP, there was a unit which is in training, which is dealing with the EQPR, that, you know, electronic quarterly monitoring system, which everybody reports on, and that goes to the, you know, towards the right of the APP. In my section, we're dealing with the so what question, you know, in terms of the MTSF in the medium term. So because we go deeper into giving the flesh, if I can put it that way, that's why they always pick us on us to come and represent the department, you know, in all spheres. It doesn't matter which sphere. So, but if we know, you know, what will assist you, you know, we customize the presentation for your use. That will be very, very helpful for us, because every time we don't know how far should we go, what should we put in there, you know, because we are really trying to empower Parliament, you know, and the cabinet and everyone else, you know, with regard to what they are doing. So we don't have one presentation fits all. We try to read and find out what in the support is needed and contextualize in the bigger so what question, what is the impact, what is the outcome, and so on and so on. And that drives performance better than targets met, target not met, you know, kind of you know, reporting which we were doing previously. So I really appreciate that guidance as to how should we serve you better, you know, in terms of the reporting. Quarterly reports are there. As I was saying, there's a unit which is doing those quarterly reports, but because they didn't get very much, you know, what do you call it, happiness, the committee at the time. So they are very scared to come here. So now it's us who are here coming with a little bit more detail, you know, but we can, you know, work on this. And then if there is a quarterly reporting mechanism which is requested, we'll go back and work with that unit. And the other units, for example, the one for frontline, which has to be going, you know, having similar quarterly going around as compared to us. With us, a cabinet said, you know, it's too frequent. It's not easy to really see the difference in terms of the outcomes and the so what, because the change which comes, it's very slow. So we keep on almost, you know, reporting the same thing. That's why they prescribed, before my time, they prescribed that the quarterly reporting must be reduced to, you know, what you call it, the biannual, you know, reporting. And then that also, you know, brings me now to the issues of the MTSF amendments. You know, because I think Kifule tied it up, and this MTSF itself, because it's also, you know, linked to a performance of ministers. That was very critical. That they said, no, you can't measure us on the, you know, the before COVID. So that is what pushed the, you know, us and departments towards the, amending, as Kifule indicated, and the cabinet approved that. So there will be a little bit of changes there and there, but we're putting an eye on it because we don't want under targeting, because we've picked it up in other areas. Other people make use of this opportunity, which came because of the COVID and the budget, to start now to really, under target, you know, so that they can have the greens. But that defeated the purpose, because the purpose of the MTSF is a 5-year chunk of the NDP. So it's a build up towards the management of the NDP, how we are from the NDP. And the APPs and the, you know, they are the build up, 1-year build up into the MTSF, you know, a medium term strategic framework. So that alignment, we are busy with it. We will make sure that, you know, we get it right, and that we shouldn't water down what we had planned before because of, misuse of that kind of opportunity. So I think I've covered more. Okay, the last one, which I thought it was very fundamental, came with the Honorable Ziki about, whether we can lose cases. We will lose cases because of how we do things and how things are not done, and nothing is done, and it's frustrating. I was telling this very group last night that, you know, for me, you know, I'm 62 years old, 63 years. It took me 34 years to get my title deed. And what I did, once I found out this thing, when we are reporting this challenge of a title deed, when I came to TPME, I went and do a sit-in in Mangwe in Christmas and refused to leave until they attended me. And then I looked at the process. I had to move from one office to the other office to the other myself, and use my own phone, use my own everything, resources. They didn't make me pay 32,000, you know, to get my clearance, regardless of, you know, whatever, you know, the receipt and everything which I have. Because I stay here, and then they believe that nothing's happened. But 34 years, you know, for me, from the previous, pre-94 targets, you know, to be able to get to where I am. And I can tell you, I was able to deal with this matter, but I was frustrated until I pulled in, you know, my ID, the card for the government, whatever, that I'm in the presidency, whatever. And then that is not appreciated, because as us, we have to be sensitive to the communities, regardless of you know, where they are, they whatever they do. And I was really not happy with that. So I really believe that, you know, we have to be looking at that. And, you know, the civil cases, this one we won't win, because these are constitutional matters we are dealing with. And it's people's lives. We are frustrating people if we are not able to perform as government. And we're trying by all means to push that that envelope the best way we can. And then with you and all of us working together, I believe, you know, this slow progress which we see all over, it's not only title deeds, everything is just too slow. And, for me, I believe that, you know, together as a unit, like now I'm seeing the way we're working and then reporting, it's like we're sitting together with AG, and I'm very, very happy with that. And if we can work together and then to deal with this matter, you know, yourself at an oversight, ourselves where we are, you know, as operational, that we can go very, very far. Thank you very much, Chair. Unless there's anything which I have left out, I remember Chair said something very important, but I can't remember that what was it, Chair, which I wanted to address, in terms of your own question. I remember the confirmation of MTSF. Yes, we've done that. And we do all welcome the title deed workshop or the summit. We all are welcoming that. We have been pushing towards that. And, we believe that something tangible will come out of that to empower our people. Thank you very much for the opportunities which you were given. Help us. We continuously sharpen, our tools. We continuously sharpen, our reporting mechanisms, everything. What we need is to add value. We just don't want to work. For some of us, we want to give the torch to those who will be remaining when we leave and go to retirement, that they do the good work which will improve our country. Thank you very much, Chair and committee.
Thank you very much, DPME and Auditor General for the response. Honorable members, let me take this opportunity. Honorable Zeki, I see your hands. Is it the legacy hands? Because we must pass now. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Where's the DM, DPME? Is she not here?
She has left. She requested to be released.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you very much. We have been empowered to interact with the department through both the report of the DPME and the Auditor General. I want to thank you, the executive from our sector, and Mr. Londolozi, that is dealing with these matters on a daily basis, and the DPME, DDG, and your team for the useful presentation, which indeed were empowered. Would continue to interact with yourselves to better our oversight role, so that our people can get what they deserve. Thank you very much, and I'm going to release the Auditor General, and the DPME members can remain so that we deal with some in-house issues.
Thank you very much, Peterson. Thanks. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you. Mr. Londolozi, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and to the Honorable Members. See you
thank
next
you.
Time when we engage again.
All right. Thank you. We have received the request from the House Chair on our program that we have to finalize the bill as soon as possible, so that we give NCOP enough time to unfold with the processes of the bill. As you know, that the bill is a Section 76 bill, so they will be required to go on public hearing, do the same processes that we have done
also the request from the Office of the Chair is that our report should then be able to get its way into Parliament before the recess, and we had to amend the program. The program is amended. Mr. Adams, do you have Mr. Day? Did Qualify give you the amended program?
Afternoon, Chair. No, she did not, Chair, but I'll check on the emails, but I don't recall her sending me the program, Chair. She only informed me of sending in for the meeting.
Okay, Sabelo, you don't have the amended program?
Chair, unfortunately, I don't have it either.
Yeah. I have it, but no, I can't post this. Let me try to open it and just to talk to it.
Chairperson?
Yes?
You can send it to L. Ben at Parliament and then I'll flight it, Chair.
Yeah, let me go. Yeah, okay. Yes, so it's L. Ben. Small letters.
Small letters, Shepherdson. L. Ben, small letters. L for love, and then B-E-N at Parliament.
Okay. At did you get it, Mr. Ben?
Not yet, Chair. Maybe it's still coming, Chairperson.
Okay. But let me in the meantime talk to it. But today's meeting, we had those briefings, and then at 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we'll have then the department on Friday from 9 to 1 o'clock, we'll then have the three entities, which is NHBRC, NHFC, SHRA, and then consideration and adoption of the minutes. And then on the 16th to the 17th, is the invitation to attend the launch of Global Action Plan Framework on Informal Settlement and Slum on the 19th of October. then there will then continue with the briefing by the HDA, Estate Agency Affairs Board, and SPRA, and the Community Scheme Ombud Services. And then we then have consideration of the minutes and adoption. And then on the 21st of to the 23rd, then we will have a public hearing in Northwest. then on the 21st of October, when we are in Northwest, after the public hearing on Friday, then we will then have a meeting on Friday from it's supposed to be 19 hours to, 19 hours to 9, where we would have to consider the BRRR report, and then on the 4th to the 6th of November, then we are going to have public hearing in Western Cape. And then the same as with Western Cape on the 4th of November, we'll then deal with the as we have agreed that we must visit the petitioners on Brede Valley. Then we'll actually visit the area on that Friday before we proceed to after we have. Public hearing will proceed to visit to those areas. And then on the 9th of November, we'll then have a meeting with the stakeholders that have actually submitted their written submission. And I am from 9 to 1. And then we'll then have later it will then be the sitting, I think, on Friday, and then we'll then have a department to come and respond on the issues that were raised on the by the public hearings on the bill and the ones that will be raised by those people who have submitted their written submission. And then on the 16th of November, we'll then deal with the motion of disability, disability, and then the formal stages. And then we read clause by clause, and then the committee deliberate on the bill, taking in consideration on the public participation issues. And then then on Friday, the 18th of November, then we have the formal stage of reading clause by clause, and the committee will then again deliberate on the bill itself. And then in that meeting we'll have a legal person from Parliament when we start the formal stages, just to assist us with the legal matters that arises on the bill itself. And then on the 23rd November, then the A list will be presented to the committee for consideration and adoption. On the 25th of November, then we deal with the B version of the bill. The B version of the bill, and then we adopt, and then we adopt the committee report, and then it will then put on the ATC for deliberation by Parliament. And then on the 30th, we're supposed to deal with the workshop on the issuance of title deeds. Maybe members can guide, because there is this thing of summit that is coming, whether we still need that. And then the program would end on the 30th of November in terms of the guidelines, because from the 5th of to the 15th of December is the constituency period. So that is, and then the rest of the issues that we had on the program, they'll form part of the first quarter report, on the first quarter of the next financial year. They'll not get lost in the system. So that is the proposed amendment of the program, for us to be able to close the the year with us adopted the bill itself. So can I then get any indication from members? As I presented, Mr. Ben, did you get the? The program. Mr. Ben.
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Mahotu.
I don't know if I must assist. He got it, he has flagged it on the screen.
Okay. Let me remove
Sorry, Chair, I was struggling with my audio, but I was flighting it the whole time, Chair.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
Chair. All right. So that is members. Can we get members to speak to the program as the amended? Silence means that members agree. Honorable members, am I audible or?
Chairperson, you are audible enough. You just said it yourself that silence means consensus. Is that what you said?
No, but when people are not speaking to yourself, you don't know whether they hear you or not. Okay, thank you very much. That will be the program, honorable members. With that note, the meeting is adjourned, and then we'll reconvene at 2:00 meeting with the department.
Chair, do we use the same link to rejoin? Because it's one calendar invite.
Mr. Ben, are we using the same?
We are using the same link, Chairperson.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.